Good day, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the third quarter 2021 Parsons Corporation earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question during the session, you'll need to press star, then one on your telephone keypad. Please be advised that today's conference may be recorded. If you require operator assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. I'd now like to hand the conference over to Dave Spille, Head of Investor Relations.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today to discuss our third quarter 2021 financial results. Please note that we've provided presentation slides on the Investor Relations section of our website. On the call with me today are Carey Smith, President and CEO, and George Ball, CFO. Today, Carey will discuss our corporate strategy and operational highlights, and then George will provide an overview of our third quarter financial results. We then will close with a question and answer session. Management may also make forward-looking statements during the call regarding future events, anticipated future trends, and the anticipated future performance of the company. We caution you that such statements are not guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. Actual results may differ materially from those projected forward-looking statements due to a variety of factors. These risk factors are described in our Form 10-K for fiscal year ended December 31, 2020, and other SEC filings. Please refer to our earnings press release for Parsons' complete forward-looking statement disclosure. We do not undertake any obligation to update forward-looking statements. Management will also make reference to non-GAAP financial measures during this call, and we remind you that these non-GAAP financial measures are not a substitute for their comparable GAAP measures. And now we'll turn the call over to Carey.
Thank you, Dave. I want to welcome everyone to Parsons' third quarter 2021 earnings call. We had a good third quarter as we delivered on the strategic and financial objectives we established at the end of the second quarter. We reported strong sequential revenue growth of 9% with 7% organic. One significant contract awards, including five worth more than $100 million, which was a company record, achieved record backlog, reported solid margins in both business segments, delivered critical program performance results, closed two important acquisitions, and implemented a $100 million share repurchase program, which supports our drive to create shareholder value. We also continue to strengthen our executive leadership team with the announcement of two new business unit presidents, and I'm encouraged by the strong hiring activity we experienced in the quarter. Finally, we are confirming all of our 2021 guidance ranges. As discussed on our last earnings call, we have three immediate priorities: deliver on our customers' critical missions, close out legacy critical infrastructure programs, and drive organic revenue growth. In terms of delivering on our customers' critical missions, we continue to receive strong customer satisfaction scores based upon our excellent program execution. This is further validated by delivering year-to-date repeat win rates of nearly 100% and more than 90% achievement of average incentive and award fees. Our salt waste processing facility program also received notable recognition as a finalist for 2021 Project of the Year by the Project Management Institute. Although we take much pride in our program performance, as I indicated last quarter, one of our top priorities is to complete legacy critical infrastructure programs awarded prior to our May 2019 IPO, which contain work we no longer pursue, such as prime construction. During the third quarter, we had two legacy programs that experienced write-downs, the details of which George will discuss in a moment. Overall, as discussed on prior quarter earnings calls, we've reduced our project risk profile by not priming construction work and enhancing program performance oversight. We've made meaningful progress in the quarter towards the completion of several of these legacy critical infrastructure programs. In terms of our organic growth priority, we remain focused on moving up the solutions integrator value chain and bidding and winning larger prime contracts. I'm pleased to report that we achieved significant progress during the third quarter, as demonstrated by our sequential organic growth of 7% and positive hiring trajectory. We continue to win large deals that are tied to the administration's commitment to deter near-peer threats and support environmental, social, and governance, or ESG initiatives, and advance the nation's infrastructure. During the third quarter, we achieved a book-to-bill ratio of 1.1 times on an enterprise basis, as well as in both segments. This comes one quarter after reporting a record quarterly book-to-bill ratio in Q2 for both Parsons and our Federal Solutions segment. Also, in our Critical Infrastructure segment, we have had four consecutive quarters with a book-to-bill ratio over 1.0 times, resulting in a trailing 12-month book-to-bill of 1.2 times. In the Federal Solutions segment, we achieved a trailing 12-month book-to-bill ratio of 1.4 times, and overall for Parsons, a 1.3 times trailing 12-month book-to-bill ratio. It's also worth highlighting that we won five single award contracts worth more than $100 million during the third quarter, which is the most in a single quarter in Parsons history. We were awarded a single award IDIQ contract with a $953 million ceiling value, under which Parsons will lead an industry team to design, procure, integrate, operate, and maintain air-based air defense systems across the European and African continents in support of the United States Air Force. This win shows our ability to move up the solutions integrator value chain. We were awarded a $556 million recompete contract with a classified customer. This win further demonstrates our track record of securing our critical recompete contracts. We were awarded a $145 million contract with the Army Corps of Engineers to develop a facility to treat hazardous energetic waste streams from the Radford Army Ammunition Plant. This is another important environmental remediation win that underpins our ESG strategy. We were also awarded a $139 million contract by the Space and Missile Systems Center for satellite operations, prototyping, and integration for support and delivery, network, infrastructure, hardware, and architecture solutions. We continue to be a technology disruptor in the space market. In addition, we were awarded a $126 million contract with Saudi Arabia's Ministry of Housing to provide program management services for the development of affordable housing. During my visit in the Middle East last month, I was pleased to see the robust infrastructure growth opportunity that exists. We also won prime positions on six multiple award IDIQ contracts. Two have multi-billion dollar ceiling values, and four have ceiling values between $50 and $250 million each. As we've indicated on prior earnings calls, we continue to be conservative in our approach to bookings on large single award contracts, and we often do not book the entire contract value. In addition, we only book awards under multiple award IDIQ vehicles as we win specific task orders. In addition to winning a significant amount of new business, we are focused on hiring and retaining the best talent to drive organic revenue growth. In our last earnings call, I reported on the hiring of our new Chief Human Resources Officer, or CHRO. Since that time, we've made several additional strategic hires, including a recognized growth leader to run our Critical Infrastructure Connected Communities business unit. We also promoted a proven performer in driving organic growth to lead our Federal Solutions Engineered Systems business unit. In addition, we achieved notable success in increasing our billable hiring during the quarter, producing our best hiring months in August, September, and October in the last 2 years. And in spite of the competitive hiring market, our attrition has remained flat and in line with industry average. In just a short period of time, the changes implemented by our new CHRO have yielded encouraging results in both hiring and retention. We continue to maintain our robust balance sheet, which supports our internal and external investments to drive growth and increase shareholder value. During the third quarter, we closed our strategic Black Horse Solutions and Echo Ridge acquisitions. In terms of our markets, we remain well positioned for future spending priorities in both segments with strong alignment to macro environment trends. In Federal Solutions, we continue to win work in areas that are aligned with the Biden administration's cyber, C5ISR, artificial intelligence, missile defense, and space priorities. Within critical infrastructure, we expect to benefit from increased investments with or without a United States infrastructure bill. In this segment, our sustainable solutions are aligned with the administration's priority infrastructure and ESG initiatives in transportation, environmental remediation, water and wastewater treatment, and the elimination of emerging contaminants. We are also well positioned to offer secure and resilient infrastructure given our extensive federal cybersecurity credentials. In addition, we see growing infrastructure demand in both Canada and the Middle East. In summary, we accomplished a great deal against our strategic objectives in the third quarter. We reported strong sequential organic revenue growth, won a significant amount of new business tied to national security and ESG priorities, made important improvements in both hiring and retention, continued to deliver mission success for our customers, and achieved solid margins in our core markets. As I look forward, I remain very excited about our outlook. We're well positioned in two growing, enduring, and profitable segments. We've solidified our core business with the $2.2 billion teams and $550 million classified recompete wins, as well as other new business wins in the third quarter. We've upgraded talent in key areas and made notable strides in recruiting and retention to drive organic growth. We remain confident in our ability to achieve our 2021 guidance ranges and believe the momentum we're seeing across both segments will continue to build as we move through the fourth quarter and into 2022. With that, I'll turn the call over to George to discuss our third quarter financial highlights. George?
Thank you, Carrie. As Carrie indicated, third quarter results were highlighted by strong sequential revenue growth, significant contract awards, and increased hiring activity. Today, I'll focus the majority of my remarks with respect to third quarter 2021 performance within the context of a sequential comparison to the previous quarter. This is consistent with our comments on our last earnings call around anticipated growth in the second half of 2021. As stated earlier, we had two critical infrastructure legacy program write-downs in the third quarter. One impacted revenue by $6.3 million, and adjusted EBITDA by $6.7 million. And the second impacted equity and earnings and adjusted EBITDA by $5.5 million. In both cases, we experienced schedule delays and cost escalation. Although more work remains to be done, we are encouraged by meaningful progress made during the quarter towards the completion of these and other projects. Moving on to our third quarter results. Total revenue for the third quarter increased 9% from the second quarter of 2021 and was up 7%, excluding approximately $18 million of revenue from our Blackhorse and Echo Ridge acquisitions. These increases were driven by higher volume on existing contracts and recent contract awards, as well as a reduction in write-downs. SG&A expenses were relatively unchanged from the second quarter of 2021. Adjusted EBITDA of $84 million represents an increase of $19 million, or 28% from last quarter, and adjusted EBITDA margin increased 130 basis points to 8.8%. These increases were driven primarily by a net $10 million reduction in legacy program write-downs, higher volume on existing contracts and recent contract awards, as well as acquisitions. I'll turn now to our operating segments, starting first with Federal Solutions, where third quarter revenue increased by $57 million, or 13%, from the second quarter of 2021. The increase in revenue was driven by higher business volume on existing contracts and recent contract awards, and $18 million associated with the acquisitions of Blackhorse and Echo Ridge. Excluding the impact of those acquisitions, revenue increased 9% organically in Q3 as compared to the previous quarter. Federal Solutions adjusted EBITDA increased $14 million, or 43%, from the second quarter of 2021, and adjusted EBITDA margin increased 190 basis points to 9.3%. These increases were driven primarily by higher volume on existing contracts and recent contract awards, acquisitions, as well as the absence of write-downs in the current quarter. Moving now to our critical infrastructure segment. Third quarter revenue increased by $20 million, or 5%, from the second quarter of 2021. This increase was driven primarily by a $13 million reduction in write-downs and higher revenue from recent contract awards. Critical infrastructure adjusted EBITDA increased by $5 million, or 14%, from the second quarter of 2021. This increase was driven primarily by a $3 million net reduction in write-downs and an increase in business volume. Critical infrastructure adjusted EBITDA margin increased 70 basis points to 8.3%. Next, I'll discuss cash flow and balance sheet metrics. Our net DSO at the end of the third quarter was 68 days, compared to 67 days at the end of the second quarter of 2021. Our third quarter operating cash flow totaled $77 million, following a seasonally strong $104 million of cash flow in the second quarter of 2021. Operating cash flow for the first 9 months of 2021 totals $116 million, compared to $113 million in the prior year period. Capital expenditures totaled $4 million in the third quarter, compared to $6 million in the prior year period. Our balance sheet remains very strong. We ended the quarter with a net debt to trailing 12-month adjusted EBITDA leverage ratio of 1.0 times. In addition to deploying capital for M&A to enhance our capabilities and expand our customer base, our board of directors recently authorized a $100 million share repurchase program as a means to drive incremental shareholder value. During the third quarter, we repurchased approximately 245,000 shares for an aggregate purchase price of $8.7 million in connection with this authorization. Turning to bookings for the third quarter, we reported contract awards of $1 billion, representing a book-to-bill ratio of 1.1 times on an enterprise basis and also within both segments. On a trailing 12-month basis, our book-to-bill ratio is a healthy 1.3 times, with Federal Solutions at 1.4 and Critical Infrastructure at 1.2. Our backlog at the end of the third quarter totaled $8.6 billion, up 2%. From the second quarter of 2021, and 10% over the third quarter of 2020. Total backlog continues to represent more than 2 years of annual revenue. Now let's turn to our guidance. We are reiterating all of our 2021 ranges provided on August 4th based on our financial results for the first 9 months of this year and our outlook for the fourth quarter. Key assumptions in connection with our 2021 guidance are outlined on slide 10 in today's PowerPoint presentation located on our investor relations website. And with that, I'll turn the call back over to Carrie.
Thank you, George. I'm pleased with our third quarter performance and believe business momentum will continue as we move through the fourth quarter and into 2022. We had strong sequential organic growth, continued excellent book-to-bill in both segments, accelerated our hiring, and strengthened our executive leadership team. We're positioned in two profitable and enduring high-growth markets. Finally, we will leverage our balance sheet for internal and external investments to drive future growth. I look forward to updating you on our progress during our fourth quarter earnings call in February. With that, we will now open the line for questions.
If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press the star, then the number one key on your touchtone telephone. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. Our first question comes from Sheila Kiley with Jefferies.
Good morning, guys, and thank you for the time. Carrie, you announced a lot of new wins in the quarter and lots of contracts. As we think about these new wins, how much of that contributes to 2022? And maybe if you could give us some of those offsets, what's up for recompete, but also project completions that might be moving off.
Sure, Sheila, thank you for the question. So first I'll cover the single award contracts since those are the most important. Four of the five single award contracts are immediate work, meaning that they're not ceiling values, which you have to drive task orders to. So the classified program is a contract that we've been performing for a few decades, and that program is going to have an increased ceiling due to expected additional customers being added to the contract. That's the one that was $556 million. The Radford contract, $145 million, basically is a project performance contract, so that'll expand over the five-year project performance. The satellite prototype integration is a continuation of effort that we've been doing for Space and Missile Systems Center, but that effort is expanding. In fact, we're rapidly hiring new hires every week to meet the demand. The Ministry of Housing is also immediate work. That's follow-on to work that we've been performing since 2011 in Saudi Arabia, and that is steady state work. So really four of the five are reflect immediate work that's gonna be additional. And then the one that is a little bit of an outlier would be the Air Base Air Defense. That's a GSA FedSim contract, so we need to bring work to the vehicle. We have an initial task order, and then from there we'll be adding additional task orders as we go. I'm also very inspired by the hiring that we've achieved. It really means a lot to have three solid months and our best since October 2019. So what that says is we will be able to achieve this growth and start to realize the revenue from those wins that we've achieved. As far as program completions, the ones that we've talked in the past are pretty much behind us, positive train control within the critical infrastructure area. And then within the federal solutions area, we had one job that we didn't bid this year that was just a procurement job that didn't have any margin on it. The only other large one within federal solutions that will end in 2022 would be salt waste processing facility.
Thank you. And then maybe I'll ask one on profits as well. You know, you have a pretty big implied step up in Q4 to 9% margins from about 8% year to date. You know, how do we think about the margin ramp into the fourth quarter?
Yeah, so first I would say, again, based on our staffing momentum that we have, the additional revenue that's going to assist. We have the addition of Black Horse acquisition, which will be there for the full quarter. The new wins obviously are helping. Continued less pass-through, as I just mentioned, and then we're expecting minimal to no write-downs as we go into the fourth quarter.
Great. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Tobey Sommer with Truist Securities.
If I could start off by asking a sort of follow-up on the write-downs in the quarter. Could you give more color on that? And specifically, is that a function of the tight labor market and supply chain issues? I'd appreciate a little bit more perspective. Thank you.
Certainly. So first, we're not seeing an impact from supply chain, so that doesn't affect our business. From the two write-down perspective, one was a program in Connected Communities, a legacy program bid back in 2015. We're almost at completion of that contract, 95% complete. We actually had several key performance milestones achieved during the quarter, and that program will successfully wind up at this point in time. The second one was the mobility solutions that we have talked about on past calls, where we are not the managing partner. We've provided additional oversight to help the managing partner. We're approaching 70% completion on that job. We're encouraged by the progress that we've made, but we still have a little bit of work to do.
And are there any ongoing lessons learned from that in terms of your forward outlook for bidding and kind of business development? Are you less inclined to be a junior partner, or is this just a specific situation?
We've had a lot of lessons learned. So we have changed our bidding philosophy, and the programs that I've talked about were all bid back pre-2016, awarded pre-2019. So we really changed our philosophy back in 2019. We do prefer to be a managing partner, not a minority partner. We're no longer priming construction work. We've de-risked the company by putting in place bid guidelines that we follow, and those are along the lines of the type of work that we will and we won't perform. We also have selective partners that we will and we won't work with. We're focusing predominantly on design work as well as owner's engineer work, which is where our pure strengths are. We have very regular program review meetings. We also have a dedicated independent cost estimating system process that we've put into place. We have bid margins, so we don't bid anything that's below 10% EBITDA margin and put significant contingency where needed. We've strengthened our joint venture board representation, and we also have a full-time risk leader that takes over our programs as necessary. And then finally, I'd hire the two recent changes that we made to the executive leadership team. The leader that is coming into Connected Communities, very strong leader, aviation, rail, and transit, smart mobility background from a couple of decades at a major company. And then the internal leader that we promoted who had been running our industrial business, very strong operational background to take over engineered systems.
Thank you. Last question from me. Could you comment on and give us some color on the vaccine mandate and perhaps some numerical questions that I'd love a perspective on. What proportion of your employees today are vaccinated, and how do you estimate the percentage of employees that when the vaccine mandate arrives, you may lose? Thanks.
Certainly, Toby. In this scenario, obviously, we've had a lot of focus on, as you're aware, the Executive Order 14042 applies to employees that are working or in connection with covered federal contracts, as well as employees that share workplaces with such employees or come into contact with them. The date given was December 8th to comply, but per the guidance that we received on Monday from the White House, it's not a cliff. So the contractors have to be showing progress towards compliance if it's not achieved. At Parsons, from the beginning of COVID, we've been encouraging employees to be vaccinated. We've also asked that they upload their vaccination status so that we can track it at a company level. And we're working very closely with those employees who have requested accommodations due to medical or religious reasons. We're also deeply involved with Office of Management and Budget and the industry associations to stay current on the latest guidance and help shape that guidance before it's released. In answer to your specific question, fortunately, a substantial majority of our employees are vaccinated, and we're fortunate that we have a diversified portfolio. So if you look at our company, the executive order doesn't apply to about 35% of the company, and that would be our employees that are based in Canada as well as the Middle East and parts of the critical infrastructure business that are not under federal contracts. We're doing everything we can to work with our employees, and we're also proactively increasing our hiring, as you've seen by our results over the last 3 months.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, that is star, then one. Our next question comes from Gavin Parsons with Goldman Sachs.
Good morning.
Morning, Gavin.
So I think for the year, the reason revenue is declining organically in both segments, you had attributed to, you know, slower start of new work, maybe some award delays that, you know, weren't able to offset the program completions you're experiencing this year. So maybe can you give us an update on the ramp up of that work, whether or not you're still seeing award delays, and any early thoughts on what that means for 2022, whether you can get back to 2020 levels of revenue? Thank you.
Yeah, so the question of slower starts, award delays, we are seeing a ramp up on the contracts. Again, that was demonstrated, I think, by our revenue achievement or hiring that we've had over the last 3 months. Really not seeing a lot of award delays. I mean, the only exception, it's a very small portion of our business, would be with a restricted customer in Maryland. But other than that, things are moving forward, and this obviously was our best award month for major awards that we've had in Parsons history. As far as 2022, we're in the process right now of putting together our operating plan, doing all the puts and takes, as we talked about on the last earnings call. And we will release guidance information in February at our fourth quarter call.
Fair enough. Then maybe just thinking about, you know, the record backlog, how long does it take for you to ramp up on that? And what's the risk? Is it just ability to hire enough people? Is it getting funded task orders on that? What do you need to execute on the backlog?
So on the backlog, we have a mix of programs, and as I discussed, some of them hit immediately, and it's hiring. So like four of the five that we won this quarter, we have to immediately hire, which is a good position to be in. Other ones, we do have a ceiling value, and we have to ramp up task orders. A great example are the FedSIM contracts. So the combatant commander is the one that I will use. That was awarded late 2019 for $590 million. It was our largest cyber contract. We've now got that contract at a steady state run rate, as you would expect, on an annual basis. So there's a little bit of kind of a lag as you get the task orders placed on contract. So that would apply to also our C5ISR exercises operations information contract and the airbase air defense contract that I just mentioned. But otherwise, our other wins hit immediately, and it's all about hiring.
Thank you, Kerry.
Thank you, Kevin.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, that is star, then one. Our next question comes from Cai von Rumohr with Cowen.
Yes, thanks so much for taking the question. So you've done a fair amount of hiring at the executive level, Kerry. Do you have any more plans? I mean, obviously, I know you might have some bluebird, but do you have any specific plans for more hiring and changes?
No, I don't at this time, Kai. I want to highlight kind of the talent that we've brought into the business, which really I think reflects on our brand and what we're accomplishing in the marketplace. We've brought in people from significant tier one companies, and just very pleased. If you look across, and in fact the results are showing it, you know, a new CHRO, a new head of communications, a new head of government relations. We also brought in an executive VP of finance that's gonna be supporting George. We've hired two new business unit presidents that really are able to hit the ground running. So I'm very pleased with our executive leadership team, and this will be the team that will take us forward.
Terrific. Thank you very much. And secondly, if you could talk a little bit about revenues. Two questions. First, where are we with Antarctica and Kwajalein? When are those likely to ramp up again? And secondly, you know, normally you have a seasonal downtick in both of your businesses in the fourth quarter. I mean, given the number of wins that you have, should we look for that same pattern, or is that there's some chance that could be different this time?
Sure. So on Kwajalein, we anticipate that restarting in the first quarter of next year. And so we'll be doing the asphalt paving work as that restarts. Antarctica is undergoing a modernization program refresh. So they're stepping back and saying which capital projects do they want to proceed with. We'll continue with our core services that we bid, but some of the other projects under Antarctica, they're reprioritizing based upon the budget outcome. So we're working closely with them on that effort. As far as seasonal downtick, that was largely used to be related more to our construction business. As we've started to wind down that business, that has less of an impact to the company. And we've also done something as far as our paid time off. We've allowed employees to defer that, and we're seeing some benefit from that in our billable hours.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for questions today. I'd like to turn the call back to Dave Spille for closing remarks.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us this morning. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to give me a call, and we look forward to speaking with many of you over the coming weeks. And with that, we'll end today's call. Have a great day.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.